Chronographing, factory ammo, horse reticles, and keeping track of dope this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and we are really scrambling to try to get this episode done this Monday. This weekend, I shot the Guardian Long Range competition at Woody's down in North Carolina, just outside of Apex, and it was a great match. I shot that on Saturday. I had about a 10.5-hour drive back on Sunday. Spent a little bit of time with the family last night, and I was out at the range this morning and now in the studio here shooting the video now. So we're on a little bit of a time crunch, but hopefully I will be able to get this out either today, which is Monday, or early tomorrow, which is Tuesday. So a little bit about the Guardian Long Range competition. You guys have heard me talk about the Guardian in the past. It is a great nonprofit organization that helps to support Bethany Christian Services, and they are an agency that helps foster children find their forever homes. And it is a really, really great cause, and I love the fact that every time I go to one of these Guardian matches, I see great people helping to raise money for a really great cause. I mean, what better cause can you have than placing children in homes so that they have loving families to help them grow and flourish? So it's really a great thing to be a part of. Gary Larson puts his heart and soul into the whole match, and everybody that hosts these matches, all the venues, they really do it without any compensation. So they put in a ton of work, and they don't really get anything out of it other than the knowledge that they are helping out to keep this thing going. So the Guardian is a great cause. I love getting invited out to these matches so that we can help bring them to you and help let you know what's going on there. And we will have a full Guardian after action report coming either later this week or early next week. We shot a lot of video. Hopefully I got video of each and every one of the stages. Some of my squad mates were nice enough to actually run the camera while I shot, so you guys will get to see me screw up a couple of stages. And overall, it was a great time. I did shoot the Modular Driven Technologies ESS chassis with a 308 barreled action into it, so that worked great. It probably required me to be a little bit more on my ball on my wind calls, which was not the case, which is the reason that I finished well down the field. I just need to get out and practice with the 308 quite a bit more. But we'll talk about more about that when I do the after action report. So let's get to some questions. And our first question this week comes from Andy. And Andy asks, when chronographing rounds, how many rounds do you fire in a string / how hot do you let the barrel get? I'm currently working on decreasing my SD and ES, but I tend to get jumps in velocity and wonder if the round cooking in the chamber versus reloading practice inconsistencies. Thoughts? Well, Andy, the way that I do it is I will generally fire a 10-shot string, and I will be cautious to make sure that as soon as I bolt up a round, I'm getting that round off. I don't want to let the round sit and cook in the chamber, because that chamber temperature could be altering the temperature of the powder charge inside the case. Now, I haven't done any definitive studies to find out exactly how long is too long, what powders are more stable doing that versus other powders. I just know that when I chronograph loads, if I'm truly running a string just to check SD, I'm not worried about the accuracy of the string. So I will burn them through as quick as I can bolt up and fire the cartridge. Now, if we see some creep from the last round or the first round to the last round because of the temperature of the barrel, I haven't really noticed any, but I haven't worked with any really temperature sensitive powders. I try to find powders that are a little bit on the temperature stable side of things. But just know that when the cartridge is in the magazine and the bolt is back, there's no heat acting on that cartridge. But as soon as you bolt it up, now it's sitting in there and that brass is conducting the heat fairly well. So you want to make sure you get that cartridge downrange as quickly as you possibly can. So that is my method. And I think 10 shots gives you a better average than a 3 or a 5 shot string. I used to do 5 shot strings. I've expanded it now to where I will do a minimum of 10 if I actually really need a good result. If I'm just spot checking something, 5 shots is probably sufficient, but I think 10 shots just gives you a more consistent average overall. Our next question comes from Jordan, and Jordan asks, can you be a true competitor in PRS style matches using box ammo, or should you spend the money on getting set up reloading? Well, Jordan, interestingly enough, when I was at the Guardian, I was talking to several other competitors there, and that was kind of an ongoing discussion that we were having. You absolutely, positively can be a top-ranked shooter shooting factory ammo. Some of the stuff from Hornady, Black Hills, Federal, some of the major manufacturers, as well as some of the boutique manufacturers like Copper Creek, they are coming up with some really, really spectacular factory loaded ammunition. I say factory because Copper Creek will do custom loads based on your information or your data, or they will help you come up with a load for your rifle, and then they will load it for you. So you're not sitting down at a reloading bench. You don't have to have any skill at reloading whatsoever. But with that ammunition, you absolutely can be a competitor and a top ranked competitor, because you're really relying more on your skill of reading the wind. Those SDs are low enough that that ammunition that you get from the factory is going to perform well enough in your rifle to get done what you need to get done. The only problem that you run into is if you want to try to chase after those game calibers like 6 Dasher or 6 Creedmoor or stuff like that, you're going to find a very hard time, or you're going to have a very hard time finding factory loaded ammunition, and you're not going to have a very wide bullet selection on what you want loaded up. What a lot of the top guys that do hand load do is they are constantly searching for that little extra ballistic coefficient, that little bit of extra speed. They're pushing their loads to the ragged edge just to get that last little bit. And I don't know that that is really necessary. That's what they're doing because their ranking depends upon it. But I think you can get along just fine. I know several top-end competitors that are running factory ammo, for one, because they're sponsored by a factory ammunition company, but also just because the ammunition from the factories for precision rifle shooting has gotten good enough that you can roll with it. So you don't need to reload, but what reloading will do is it will save you some costs because you can reuse that brass overall, and it'll allow you to fine-tune your loads to the rifle so you can get just a little bit more accuracy, and you can play with the new bullets as soon as they come out. You can play with new powders as they come out, but that's not necessary to compete in the game. Our next question comes from Brandon, and Brandon says, can you talk about the benefits and drawbacks of the myriad of some of the Horus reticles? I recently bought a US Optics B25 to go on a custom-built 338 Lapua. And later on, Brandon said that he's actually running the Tremor 3 reticle in that scope. Now, the Tremor reticles are not my favorite because they have a lot of stuff in there that I don't think I really need. I prefer, if I'm going to go with the Horus reticles, the H59 reticle, because it is really caliber agnostic. It doesn't care which load you're shooting. You don't have to apply correction factors to use wind hold dots and all this stuff. It is just a mill grid, and you can roll off of the mill grid. But the main thing with the Horus reticles is new shooters will get behind a rifle with a Horus reticle, and a lot of times they'll have some vapor lock in that brain because there's so much information in that reticle. There's so many dots and dashes and grids and things like that. But when you learn the reticle and you become comfortable with ignoring what you don't need to see when you don't need to see it, and you just concentrate on the things that you do need to see, then I think the Horus reticles are really, really helpful. I didn't used to think that way when I first started using the Horus reticles, but as I got more and more used to them, I enjoy them quite a bit more. I like things in the H59, like I like the open center with the dot in the dead center. There are guys that absolutely hate having a dot in the center. They want a solid crosshair, or they want an open center. And that comes down just to personal preference. But I think the markings in the horse reticle are close enough together that they can be useful for you at longer ranges. The way the reticle is laid out just really works well for me. But it does take time to train with the different features in the reticle and to get used to ignoring the extra stuff that you don't need to see at that time, because not every shooting solution is going to require every feature in the reticle. Very often what the horse reticle will let me do is shoot most of a match without ever touching my turrets, and I like that just because it is an added speed advantage. When you're running a scope like the Bushnell XRS that I have here, there is a little bit of lash in the turrets, and the markings are close enough together that in some lighting conditions that we had this weekend, it was hard to see what I'm dialing the turret to, and it was easier just to look through the reticle. When you're shooting in situations like the hide, where you're in a dark attic and you're shooting out into bright light, your turret is backlit really badly, so it makes it difficult to see the hash marks and the numbers on here, since we have a dark colored scope body and I have black markings on it. Might not have been an issue if I was running a scope with a black finish and white markings, but in this case, it was easier in a lot of situations just to look at the grid and run it that way. The horse reticles on their own, I could do whole hour-long videos probably on each one of the reticles. We may look at doing that at some point in the future, but right now, just know that they're great. I like the H59. I'm less enamored with some of the other reticles out there like the Tremor, but they do take some practice, and they do take you getting used to the reticle and used to the features before you can really maximize them. Next question comes from Nathan, and Nathan asks, what is your preferred way to keep track of known holdovers or scope dope? Sticky note taped to the stock? Nathan, at the last couple of matches, I have been using one of these guys. This is a Sidewinder, and what it allows you to do is wrap this little metal or rubber-coated metal cable around your scope, and I will usually hold it right on the side of the scope so that with my support side eye, I can see my dope, and I can very quickly and easily dial it in. And you can see right here on just this one business size card, I have all the dope for all six stages of the Guardian match written down on it. Now, I don't always recommend doing this. I was running low on these cards and I haven't got out and gotten more, so I didn't want to waste a lot, but you do end up, if you do a lot of this data, you'll start to lose track of where you need to be on the card. But you can put a lot of data on this card, and because it's just held on by this little cable here, if you rake it against a barricade or something, usually it will stay on the rifle. It will just fold in on you, and then you fold it back out to where you need it. Some of the other solutions that have a rigid setup velcroed on the side of the stock, you can rake them off and then they fall off. Some of the more rigid mounting solutions also run the risk of breaking if you really slam them into a barricade. So I really like this, and I like the fact that it's plastic. It's fairly resistant to water. So if you have a light rain or a light mist, then you're going to be fairly good on that. And it actually is double-sided, so if for some reason you need to write something on one side and write something on the other side, then you could really easily twist it to see whichever side you needed if that was the case. Also, because it is on this little bendable cable, then you can bend it down in landscape if you wanted to draw a range card on it, or I'll usually run it in portrait mode here in the vertical, so I've got my drop table on it. And the information that I put on is usually the range to the target. My first column after that is my elevation to the target, and then my second column is a 10 mile an hour wind, 10 mile an hour full value wind on it. So that allows me to get a good guesstimate on my wind based on wind direction and wind speed, and it gives me an exact elevation to either hold or to dial on my scope. I tried a bunch of different methods. I tried the wrist coach, and what I always found myself having to do was break position to look at my arm. So even if my arm was tucked up underneath me, usually the wrist coach didn't end up exactly where it needed to be so I could look down at the data. I tried sticky notes on the stock before, and you usually have to come off and look down at the stock because it's flat on there. If you put it on the side, same thing. One thing that can be useful is the cards that go inside scope caps. If you have Butler Creek type scope caps or Vortex caps that flip up, Vortex now allows you to go on their website and you can put in your drop tables and stick them in the little scope caps. That requires you come up with the drop tables ahead of time. I will write these out the morning of the match when we're getting our stage briefs, and I will check the longest of the data again in the middle of the afternoon to make sure that it hasn't changed, or if the density altitude has changed, like you'll see a couple of these on here. We did have a significant DA change from early in the morning to late afternoon, and I scratched out the longest of the dope and rewrote it to correct, and it was only a tenth of a mil off on each of those. But it's easy to do, whereas pre-made inserts for your scope caps are not as easy to do. But then again, you can just write index cards and jam index cards in there too. So inside the scope cap is a viable option if you want to do that. You just want to make sure, however you decide to set it up, you can see the dope without breaking position on the rifle. You don't want to have to move your support arm, because that may be holding the rifle on a barricade, or it may be keeping your rear bag at its correct pressure to keep the stock where you need it. You don't want to have to move your head from behind the rifle. You want to be able to be on target, look, see what your dope is, dial what you need and fire, or hold what you need and fire. So that's the most efficient way that I've found to do it. And we will leave a link for this little guy down in the description below. They are a little expensive. I will tell you, if you don't want to go with the pre-made route like this, there are these rubberized gear tie things. I believe Night Eyes makes them. I know our local grocery store has a section that has just the rubber cable ties in them. And what I thought about doing, and I may do a video on it later, is getting one of those and you just wrap it around the scope and get a binder clip, and you can clip an index card to one of these cable ties and have it hanging off the side of your scope. It's not going to be as durable. It's not going to be that great in wet weather. But if you want to see if this kind of setup will work for you, that will work very easily. It'll cost a couple of bucks, and it should get you up and running and figure out if that position is correct for you. So if you want to see a video on that, let me know down in the comment section below, and we may look at trying to do a real quick, easy video on a down and dirty dope card holder. Our last question this week comes from Sean, and Sean asks, what is a good, reliable pistol to start IPSC comps that will allow a good progression through to competitive shooting? Well, Sean, there are a ton of good handguns out there that'll get you started in IPSC shooting and that will not prohibit you from progressing to a professional level. Now, I would definitely suggest that you start in the production class, or the, if you're in IDPA, it's called the stock service pistol class, but it is basically a bone stock defensive pistol. And you can do slight modifications, like you can enhance the trigger as long as you don't change the outward appearance of the trigger, that kind of stuff. But for that, if you're truly going at it from a competition standpoint, my suggestion would be to look for a used third generation Glock 34. It's a 9mm. It is a pistol that is designed for competition, and it will still work in the entry classes, but it will allow you to advance all the way up to the top levels of shooting. It is a double stack magazine, so if you decide later on to modify that pistol, you can modify a 34 all the way up into an open class pistol if you decide to do so. Or you can keep it totally stock, and you can shoot it totally stock up to a master class level should you decide to do so. They are relatively inexpensive when you compare it to some of the 1911 style pistols out there, and even some of the other striker fired pistols. There are tons of options for magazines. The Magpul magazines work very well, and there are tons of options and tons of holster accessories out there for it. Now, I carry Glocks for work. I carry Glocks off-duty. I'm not married to the Glock platform. Smith & Wesson, the M&Ps are some great options, and the HK VP9 is a fairly serviceable pistol as well. So there are those options out there as well. But the Glock, I still think, kind of walks away with the trophy as far as the wide variety of options that you have available for it. You can find just about any type of sighting system that you want for it, any type of iron sights, and you can replace those even in the lowest levels with just about anything that is a traditional sight design. Not peep sights, but a traditional three-dot or a plain iron sight type setup. So my recommendation would be the Glock 34. Now, if you don't want something at large, if you want something that you can both shoot in competition and carry concealed, then look at the Glock 17 or Glock 19. However, what you get when you start to shorten up that system is the recoil impulse is not as forgiving, and you're shortening up your sight radius, which is important for longer range accuracy when you are running iron sights in competition. So the Glock 34 is really designed for competition, but the 17 or the 19 will work fine. I recommend that you stay with the Gen 3 versus the Gen 4 or the Gen 5. The Gen 4, the trigger pull is significantly heavier on it. It takes a little bit more to get that trigger pull down to a nice feeling level. And the Gen 5 just hasn't proven itself yet. I haven't shot enough rounds through our Gen 5 yet to say go with the Gen 5. Plus, there is no Gen 5 Glock 34 yet. I don't know if they will produce one or not, but that's just not an option. So check with the Gen 3 Glock 34. Don't worry about putting any kind of crazy triggers or any kind of different bars or anything in it to begin with. The stock trigger on the Gen 3 Glock 34 should be good to go for competition right out of the box. So that's my recommendation. I know there are a bunch of guys out there that have other options, that have other pistols that they like. So hey, if you're a guy out there that you shoot IPSC, leave a comment down below and tell them what type of pistol that you recommend. I really want to hear what you guys recommend. It's been a while since I've shot IPSC. I am possibly going to get back into shooting IDPA, but Steel Challenge is really my thing. So if you've got a pistol recommendation for Sean, please drop it in the comment section below. And that's all we have for questions on this Mail Call Mondays, but I'm going to talk about two things that we've got right here. When I came back from Guardian, we had a little package here from Magneto Speed, and Magneto Speed has their grip system, the M-Series grip, which is a great AR-type grip. We've been working on it for a little while on a carbine, and now we're going to switch it over and do some more precision-oriented stuff with it, and I was happy to see that we finally got one of their grip pods in. This little monopod goes in the grip and allows you to quickly deploy the monopod and get that rear adjustment. Now, I really want to see how stable that is versus just a bag in the rear. It really is fairly lightweight. It's not going to add a ton to the weight of the overall system. And it's one of those things that when it's collapsed, it's not really in the way. So I can't wait to see how well this works actually getting out and target shooting with it. And one of the other things that they sent us is one of their new T1000 target hit indicators. This guy is really cool. You've seen some posts about it on our Facebook page before. And what it is an LED bar that goes out on your target. And when you hit the target, it will flash a preset flash pattern to let you know that you hit it. So at longer ranges, when you're shooting smaller, lighter calibers that may not affect the target very much, or you may not get a lot of splash on it, you will still get a really clear visual signal that you hit the target. Additionally, if you have a near miss that just passes by the target, it will detect the near miss and it will flash you a different amber signal to let you know that that was a miss. Now, we'll get into the full review on this, but when guys saw some of the photos of it, they were really concerned because it does have a reflector that peeks over the target to allow you to see that LED light. The majority of the hit indicator actually Velcros on the back of the target, so it's protected by the steel target in front of it. But that reflector has to peek around to show you what's going on. Well, obviously, if you have a edge hit on the target, then you're going to hit the reflector. But the reflector is actually designed to take quite a few hits, and the bullet will pass right through it, and the reflector will be still be serviceable. Additionally, they do include an extra reflector in each one of these. So if you do have that friend who sends 30 edge hits across the target and just really obliterates the reflector, you can go ahead and fix the reflector and then make him buy you a new one with the spare that comes in the kit. So I'm really looking forward to getting this out, putting it on the target. Don't worry, we are going to shoot the reflector to show you guys that it can take a hit. And then we'll see how well it works overall at close range and at longer ranges. So looking forward to getting the T-1000 out and checking that out. If you guys have any questions or comments on anything that we've covered on the show, please leave them in the comments section below or send them to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app, you can send your questions to us at 8541tactical@gmail.com. If you like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And I want to send a shout out to our Patreon subscribers. You guys have been helping us out a ton. If you want to know more about Patreon, we've got a link down in the comments section below or in the description below. And Patreon is a great way to allow you guys to help support what we're doing, and you get to see some of the inner workings of the show and some things that we don't generally post on our Facebook page and other places. So check out Patreon. We'd love to have you as one of our patrons, and thank you guys very much for supporting the channel. And until next time, get out and shoot!